date. Heading home from working out at Exclusive and after an intense shiatsu massage, I stop at a newsstand near my building, scanning the adults-only rack with my Walkman still on. The soothing strains of Pachelbel's Canon somehow complementing the harshly lit laminated photographs in the magazines I flip through. I buy Lesbian Vibrator Bitches and Cunt on Cunt, along with the current Sports Illustrated and the new issue of Esquire, even though I subscribe to them, and both have already arrived in the mail. I wait until the stand is empty to make my purchase. The vendor says something, motions toward his hook nose, while handing me the magazines, along with my change. I lower the volume and lift one of the Walkman's earphones up and ask, "What?" He touches his nose again, and in a thick, nearly impenetrable accent says, I think, "Nose you is bleeding." I put my Bottega Veneta briefcase down and lift a finger up to my face. It comes away red, wet with blood. I reach into my Hugo Boss overcoat and bring out a polo handkerchief and wipe the blood away, nod my thanks, slip my Wayfarer aviator sunglasses back on, and leave. Fucking Iranian. In the lobby of my building, I stop at the front desk and try to get the attention of a black Hispanic doorman I don't recognize. He's on the phone to his wife or his dealer or some crack addict and stares at me as he nods, the phone cradled in the premature folds of his neck. When it dawns on him that I want to ask something, he sighs, rolls his eyes up, and tells whoever is on the line to hold on.
"Yeah, what you need?" he mumbles.
"Yes," I begin, my tone as gentle and polite as I can possibly muster. "Could you please tell the superintendent that I have a crack in my ceiling and..." I stop. He's looking at me as if I have overstepped some kind of unspoken boundary, and I'm beginning to wonder what word confused him. Certainly not crack. So what was it? Superintendent? Ceiling? Maybe even please?
"What you mean?"
He sighs thickly, slumped back, still staring at me. I look down at the marble floor and also sigh and tell him, "Look, I don't know. Just tell the superintendent it's Bateman in 10i. When I bring my head back up to see if any of this is registered, I'm greeted by the expressionless mask of the doorman's heavy, stupid face. I am a ghost to this man, I'm thinking. I'm something unreal, something not quite tangible, yet still an obstacle of sorts. And he nods, gets back on the telephone, resumes speaking in a dialect totally alien to me. I collect my mail. Polo catalog, American Express bill, June Playboy, invitation to an office party at a new club called Bedlam. Then walk to the elevator, step in while inspecting the Ralph Lauren brochure and press the button for my floor, and then the closed door button. But someone gets in right before the door shut, and instinctively I turn to say hello. It's the actor, Tom Cruise, who lives in the penthouse, and as a courtesy, without asking him, I press the PH button, and he nods thank you and keeps his eyes fixed on the numbers lighting up above the door in rapid succession. He's much shorter in person, and he's wearing the same pair of black Wayfarers I have on. He's dressed in blue jeans, a white T-shirt, an Armani jacket. To break the noticeably uncomfortable silence, I clear my throat and say, "I thought you were very fine in Bartender. I thought it was quite a good movie, and Top Gun, too. I really thought that was good." He looks away from the numbers and then straight at me.
"It was called Cocktail," he says softly.
"Pardon?" I say, confused. He clears his throat and says,
"Cocktail, not Bartender. The film was called Cocktail."
A long pause follows. Just the sound of cables moving the elevator up higher into the building competes with the silence, obvious and heavy, between us.
"Oh, yeah. Right,"
I say, as if the title just dawned on me.
"Cocktail."
"Oh, yeah, that's right," I say. "Great Bateman. What are you thinking about?" I shake my head as if to clear it, and then, to patch things up, hold out my hand. "Hi, Pat Bateman." Cruz tentatively shakes it. "So," I go, "you like living in this building?" He waits a long time before answering. I guess. It's great, I say, isn't it? He nods, not looking at me. And I press the button for my floor again, an almost involuntary reaction. We stand there in silence. So, Cocktail, I say after a while. That's the name. He doesn't say anything, doesn't even nod. But now he's looking at me strangely, and he lowers his sunglasses and says with a slight grimace, your nose is bleeding. I stand there, rock still for a moment, but before understanding that I have to do something about this, I pretend to be suitably embarrassed, quizzically touch my nose, then bring out my polo handkerchief, already spotted brown, and wipe the blood away from my nostrils, overall handling it sort of well. Must be the altitude, I laugh. We're up so high. He nods, says nothing, looks up at the numbers. The elevator stops at my floor, and when the door is open, I tell Tom, I'm a big fan. It's really good to finally meet you. Oh, yeah, right. Cruz smiles that famous grin and jabs at the closed door button. The girl I'm going out with tonight, Patricia Worrell, blonde, model, dropped out of Sweetbriar recently after only one semester, has left two messages on the answering machine letting me know how incredibly important it is I call her. While loosening my Matisse-inspired blue silk tie from Bill Robinson, I dial her number and walk across the apartment, cordless phone in hand, to flip on the air conditioning. She answers on the third ring.
Hello?
Patricia, hi, it's Pat Bateman.
Oh, hi, she says. Listen, I'm on the other line. Can I call you back?
Well, I say.
Look, it's my health club, she says. They've screwed up my account. I'll call you back in a sec.
Yeah, I say, and hang up. I go into the bedroom and take off what I was wearing today, a herringbone wool suit with pleated trousers by Giorgio Corrigiari, a cotton Oxford shirt by Ralph Lauren, a knit tie from Paul Stewart, and suede shoes from Cole Haan. I slip on a pair of $60 boxer shorts I bought at Barney's and do some stretching exercises, holding the phone, waiting for Patricia to call back. After 10 minutes of stretching, the phone rings, and I wait 6 rings to answer it.
Hi, she says. It's me, Patricia.
Could you hold on? I've got another call.
Oh, sure,
she says. I put her on hold for 2 minutes, then get back on the line.
Hi,
I say. Sorry.
That's okay.
So, dinner, I say. Stop by my place around 8?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about,
she says slowly. Oh, no, I moan. What is it?
Well, see, it's like this, she begins. There's this concert at Radio City and...
No, 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 I tell her adamantly. No music.
But my ex-boyfriend, this keyboardist from Sarah Lawrence, he's in the backup band and...
She stops, as if she has already decided to protest my decision. No, Patricia, I tell her firmly, thinking to myself, damn it, why this problem? Why tonight?
Oh, Patrick, she whines into the phone. It'll be so much fun.
I am now fairly sure that the odds of having sex with Patricia this evening are quite good, but not if we attend a concert in which an ex-boyfriend, there is no such thing with Patricia, is in the backup band. I don't like concerts, I tell her, walking into the kitchen. I open the refrigerator and take out a liter of Evian. I don't like concerts, I say again. I don't like live music.
But this one isn't like the others, she lamely adds. We have good seats.
Listen, there's no need to argue, I say. If you want to go, go.
But I thought we were going to be together,
she says, straining for emotion.
I thought we were going to have dinner, and then, almost definitely an afterthought, be together. The two of us.
I know, I say. Listen, we should all be allowed to do exactly what we want to do. I want you to do what you want to do. She pauses and tries a new angle.
This music is so beautiful, so, I know it sounds corny, but it's glorious. The band is one of the best you'll ever see. They're funny and wonderful, and the music is so great, and, oh gosh, I just want you to see them so badly. We'll have a great time, I guarantee it, she says, with dripping earnestness.
No, no, you go, I say. You have a good time.
Patrick, she says, I have 2 tickets.
No, I don't like concerts, I say. Live music bugs me.
Well, she says, and her voice sounds genuinely tinged with maybe real disappointment, I'll feel bad that you're not there with me.
I say, go and have a good time. I unscrew the cap off the Evian bottle, timing my next move. Don't worry. I'll just go to Dorsey alone, then. It's okay. There is a very long pause that I am able to translate into, right, now see if you want to go to that lousy fucking concert. I take a large gulp of Evian, waiting for her to tell me what time she'll be over.
Dorsia?
She asks, and then suspiciously, you have reservations there? I mean, for us?
Yes, I say, 8:30.
Well, she emits a little laugh, and then faltering,
it was, well, what I mean is, I've seen them, I just wanted you to see them.
Listen, what are you doing? I ask. If you're not coming, I have to call someone else. Do you have Emily Hamelin's number?
Oh, now, now, Patrick, don't be rash.
She giggles nervously. They are playing 2 more nights, so I can see them tomorrow. Listen, calm down, okay?
Okay.
I say, I am calm.
Now, what time should I be over?
Restaurant whore asks.
I said 8,
I tell her, disgusted.
That's fine, she says, and then in a seductive whisper, see you at 8.
She lingers on the phone as if she expects me to say something else, as if maybe I should congratulate her for making the correct decision, but I hardly have time to deal with this, so I abruptly hang up. The instant after I hang up on Patricia, I dash across the room and grab the Zagat guide and flip through it until I find Dorsia. With trembling fingers, I dial the number. Busy. Panicked, I put the phone on constant redial, and for the next 5 minutes, nothing but a busy signal, faithful and ominous, repeats itself across the line. Finally a ring, and in seconds before there's an answer, I experience that rarest of occurrences, an adrenaline rush. Dorsia, someone answers. Sex not easily identifiable, made androgynous by the wall of sound noise in the background. Please hold. It sounds slightly less noisy than a packed football stadium, and it takes every ounce of courage I can muster to stay on the line and not hang up. I'm on hold for 5 minutes, my palms sweaty, sore from clenching the cordless phone so tightly, a fraction of me realizing the futility of this effort, another part hopeful, another fraction pissed off that I didn't make the reservations earlier or get Jean to. The voice comes back on the line and says gruffly, Dorsia. I clear my throat. Yes, I know it's a little late, but is it possible to reserve a table for 2 at 8:30 or 9, perhaps? I'm asking this with both eyes shut tight. There is a pause. The crowd in the background, a surging, deafening mass, and with real hope coursing through me, I open my eyes, realizing that the maitre d', God love him, is probably looking through the reservation book for a cancellation, but then he starts giggling, low at first. But it builds to a high-pitched crescendo of laughter, which is abruptly cut off when he slams down the receiver. Stunned, feverish, feeling empty, I contemplate the next move, the only sound, the dial tone buzzing noisily from the receiver. Gather my bearings, count to 6, reopen the Zagat guide, and steadily regain my concentration against the almost overwhelming panic about securing an 8:30 reservation somewhere, if not as trendy as Dorsia, then at least in the next best league. I eventually get a reservation at Barcadia for 2 at 9, and that only because of a cancellation. And though Patricia will probably be disappointed, she might actually like Barcadia. The tables are well spaced. The lighting is dim and flattering, the food nouvelle southwestern, and if she doesn't, what is the bitch going to do? Sue me?
I worked out heavily at the gym after leaving the office today, but the tension has returned. So I do 90 abdominal crunches, 150 push-ups, and then I run in place for 20 minutes while listening to the new Huey Lewis CD. I take a hot shower and afterwards use a new facial scrub by Caswell Massey and a body wash by Groyna. Then a body moisturizer by Lubriderm and a Neutrogena facial cream. I debate between two outfits. One is a wool crepe suit by Bill Robinson. I bought at Saks with this cotton jacquard shirt from Chiavari and an Armani tie. Or a woolen cashmere sport coat with blue plaid, a cotton shirt, and pleated wool trousers by Alexander Julian with a polka dot silk tie by Bill Blass. The Julian might be a little too warm for May, but if Patricia's wearing this outfit by Karl Lagerfeld that I think she's going to, then maybe I will go with the Julian because it would go well with her suit. The shoes are crocodile loafers by A. Testoni. A bottle of Scharfenberger is on ice in a Spiro's spun aluminum bowl, which is a Christine Vanderherde etched glass champagne cooler, which sits on a Christophe Lague silver-plated bar tray. The Scharfenberger isn't bad. It's not Cristal, but why waste Cristal on this bimbo? She probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference anyway. I have a glass of it while waiting for her, occasionally rearranging the Steuben animals on the glass-top coffee table by Turkin. Or sometimes I flip through the last hardcover book I bought, something by Garrison Keillor. Patricia is late. While waiting on the couch in the living room, the Willerts are jukebox playing Cherish by the Levin Spoonful. I come to the conclusion that Patricia is safe tonight, that I am not going to unexpectedly pull a knife out and use it on her just for the sake of doing so, that I am not going to get any pleasure watching her bleed from slits I've made by cutting her throat or slicing her neck open or gouging her eyes out. She's lucky, even though there is no real reasoning behind the luck. It could be that she's safe because her wealth, her family's wealth, protects her tonight. Or it could be that it's simply my choice. Maybe the glass of Scharfenberger has deadened my impulse. Or maybe it's simply that I don't want to ruin this particular Alexander Julian suit by having the bitch spray her blood all over it. Whatever happens, the useless fact remains. Patricia will stay alive, and this victory requires no skill, no leaps of the imagination, no ingenuity on anyone's part. This is simply how the world, my world, moves. She arrives 30 minutes late, and I tell the doorman to let her up, even though I meet her outside my door while I'm locking it. She isn't wearing the Karl Lagerfeld suit I expected, but she looks pretty decent anyway. A silk gazar blouse with rhinestone cufflinks by Louis Dell'Olio, and a pair of embroidered velvet pants from Saks. Crystal earrings by Wendy Gell for Anne Klein, and gold slingback pumps. I wait until we're in the cab heading midtown to tell her about not going to Dorsia, and then I apologize profusely, mention something about disconnected phone lines, a fire, a vengeful maitre d'. She gives a little gasp when I drop the news, ignores the apologies, and turns away from me to glare out the window. I try to placate her by describing how trendy, how luxurious the restaurant we're going to is. Explain its pasta with fennel and banana, its sorbets. But she only shakes her head, and then I'm reduced to telling her, oh Christ, about how Barcadia has gotten much more expensive than Dorsia. But she is relentless. Her eyes, I swear, intermittently tear. She doesn't say anything until we're seated at a mediocre table near the back section of the main dining room, and that's only to order a Bellini. For dinner, I order the shad roe ravioli with apple compote as an appetizer, and the meatloaf with chèvre and quail stock sauce for an entree. She orders the red snapper with violets and pine nuts, and for an appetizer, a peanut butter soup with smoked duck and mashed squash, which sounds strange, but is actually quite good. New York Magazine called it a playful but mysterious little dish, and I repeat this to Patricia, who lights a cigarette while ignoring my lit match, sulkily slumped in her seat, exhaling smoke directly into my face, occasionally shooting furious looks at me, which I politely ignore, being the gentleman that I can be. Once our plates arrive, I just stare at my dinner. The meatloaf dark red triangles, topped by chèvre, which has been tinted pink by pomegranate juice, squiggles of thick tan quail stock circling the beef, and mango slices dotting the rim of the wide black plate. For a long time, a little confused, before deciding to eat it, hesitantly picking up my fork. Even though dinner lasts only 90 minutes, it feels as if we have been sitting at Barcadia for a week, and though I have no desire to visit Tunnel afterwards, it seems appropriate punishment for Patricia's behavior. The bill comes to $320, less than I expected, actually, and I put it on my Platinum Amex. In the cab heading downtown, my eyes locked on the meter, our driver tries to make conversation with Patricia, who completely ignores him while checking her makeup in a Gucci compact, adding lipstick to an already heavily colored mouth. There was a baseball game on tonight, and I think I forgot to videotape, so I won't be able to watch it when I get home. But I remember that I bought 2 magazines after work today, and I can always spend an hour or so poring over those. I check my Rolex and realize that if we have 1 drink, maybe 2, I'll get home in time for late night with David Letterman. Though Patricia is appealing and I wouldn't mind having sex with her body, the idea of treating her gently, of being a kind date, of apologizing for this evening, for not being able to get into Dorsia, even though Barcadia is twice as expensive as Dorsia, for Christ's sakes, rubs me the wrong way. The bitch is probably pissed we don't have a limo. The cab stops outside Tunnel. I pay the fare and leave the driver a decent tip and hold the door open for Patricia, who ignores my hand when I try to help her step out of the cab. No one stands outside the ropes tonight. In fact, the only person on 24th Street is a bum who sits by a dumpster, writhing in pain, moaning for change or food, and we pass quickly by him as one of the 3 doormen who stand behind the ropes lets us in. Another one patting me on the back, saying, "How are you, Mr. McCullough?" I nod, opening the door for Patricia, and before following her in, say, "Fine, Jim," and I shake his hand. Once inside, after paying $50 for the 2 of us, I head immediately to the bar without really caring if Patricia follows. I order a J&B on the rocks. She wants a Perrier, no lime, and orders this herself. After I down half the drink, leaning against the bar and checking the hard-body waitress out, something suddenly seems out of place. It's not the lighting, or In Excess singing New Sensation, or the hard body behind the bar. It's something else. When I slowly turn around to take in the rest of the club, I'm confronted by space that is completely deserted. Patricia and myself are the only 2 customers in the entire club. We are, except for the occasional hard body, literally the only 2 people in Tunnel. New Sensation becomes The Devil Inside, and the music is full blast, but it feels less loud because there isn't a crowd reacting to it, and the dance floor looks vast when empty. I move away from the bar and decide to check out the club's other areas, expecting Patricia to follow, but she doesn't. No one guards the stairs that lead to the basement, and as I step down them, the music from upstairs changes, melds itself into Belinda Carlisle singing I Feel Free. The basement has 1 couple in it who look like Sam and Eileen Sanford, but it's darker down here, warmer. And I could be wrong. I move past them as they stand by the bar drinking champagne and head over toward this extremely well-dressed Mexican-looking guy sitting on a couch. He's wearing a double-breasted wool jacket and matching trousers by Mario Valentino, a cotton T-shirt by Agnes B., and leather slip-ons, no socks, by Susan Bennis Warren Edwards, and he's with a good-looking, muscular Euro-trash chick, dirty blonde, big tits, tan, no makeup, smoking Merit ultralights, who has on a cotton gown with a zebra print by Patrick Kelly and silk and rhinestone high-heeled pumps. I ask the guy if his name is Ricardo. He nods. Sure. I ask for a gram. Tell him Madison sent me. I pull my wallet out and hand over $50 and 2 20s. He asks the Euro trash chick for her purse. She hands him a velvet bag by Ann Moore. Ricardo reaches in and hands me a tiny folded envelope. Before I leave, the Eurotrash girl tells me she likes my gazelle skin wallet. I tell her I would like to tit-fuck her and then maybe cut off her arms, but the music, George Michael singing Faith, is too loud and she can't hear me. Back upstairs, I find Patricia where I left her, alone at the bar, nursing a Perrier. "Listen, Patrick," she says, her attitude relenting. "I just want you to know that I'm a bitch. Listen, do you want to do some coke?" I shout, cutting her line off. "Oh, yeah. Sure." She's wildly confused. "Come on," I yell, taking her hand. She puts her drink down on the bar and follows me through the deserted club, up the stairs toward the restrooms. There's really no reason why we couldn't do it downstairs, but that seems tacky. And so we do most of it in one of the men's room stalls. Back outside the men's room, I sit on a couch and smoke one of her cigarettes while she goes downstairs to get us drinks. She comes back, apologizing for her behavior earlier this evening. "I mean, I love Barcadia. The food was outstanding. And that mango sorbet, oh my God, I was in heaven. Listen, it's okay that we didn't go to Dorsia. We can always go some other night, and I know that you probably tried to get us in, but it's just so hot right now. But, oh yeah, I really love the food at Barcadia. How long has it been open? I think it's been 3-4 months. I read a great review in New York, or maybe it was Gourmet. But anyway, do you want to come with me to this band tomorrow night? Or maybe we can go to Dorsia and then see Wallace's band, or maybe go to Dorsia after. But maybe it's not even open that late. Patrick, I'm serious. You should really see them. Avatar is such a great lead singer, and I actually thought I was in love with him once. Well, actually, I was in lust, not love. I really liked Wallace. But he was into this whole investment banking thing then, and he couldn't handle the routine, and he broke down. It was the acid, not the cocaine, that did it. I mean, I know, but so when that all fell apart, I knew that it would be, like, best to just hang out and not deal with it. J&B, I am thinking. Glass of J&B in my right hand, I am thinking. Hand, I am thinking. Caravari, shirt from Caravari. Fusilli, I am thinking. Jamie Gertz, I am thinking. I would like to fuck Jamie Gertz, I am thinking. Porsche 911. Sharpe, I am thinking. I would like to own a Sharpe. I'm 26 years old, I am thinking. I will be 27 next year. Valium. I would like a Valium. No, 2 Valium, I am thinking. Cellular phone, I am thinking.